It's time to get brutally honest.
When in doubt, I believe Kyle Lowry will continue to be Kyle Lowry. Guess what? That's a very effective player, but I don't think it's something that you can win with long term.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues on a Friday afternoon here in Toronto. Brian Hayes, Steve Simmons from Sun Media. Scott Miller will join us later in the hour. MLB analyst with the Bleacher Report. Jays are at Wrigley, so we're tracking that. They had a very positive homestand. Won a lot of games. They've won three series in a row for the first time since late May. And yet they're still three out of a second wildcard spot.
Every time you think they're completely done, they give you that little bit of breathing space that tells you they're not completely done. But I've kind of adopted a philosophy. Until they're 500, which they have not been at any time this season, but they're close enough now that they can be there. But until they're 500, I won't really consider them a factor in the American League as the second wild card team, because you're still not really in the race, no matter how many games you're back by all the teams you have to jump, if you're not in that 500 position, and then with the ability to then win a series and put yourself into contention.
I think they're 0-7 or 0-8 in chances to actually get to 500 this year.
Might be 9.
Yeah, it might be 0-9. And you're right, as bad as it has been, and what has become evident is the American League is a cesspool. Like, it's awful. Houston has been brilliant, but they're beating up on teams like Oakland and Texas and even the Angels and the Mariners, who maybe had higher expectations, Seattle in particular, and they've had really bad injury problems, especially with the rotation at times this year. But there's just bottom feeder after bottom feeder. Boston, the Yankees, Cleveland, and Houston. And Houston's the only team that has just had basically smooth sailing, although even after the trade deadline,
they've had
a little
problems.
They've struggled recently. Ever since they acquired Francisco Liriano, they've kind of fallen off a cliff. But Boston's had times where you've looked at them and wondered what they were. The Yankees have had ups and downs. Cleveland has not taken off the way people thought they did. They had a really slow first half of the season.
Their whole season has been off to me. Like, they've never been what you thought they'd be coming out of the playoffs last year. I mean, they were that close to winning the World Series with the amazing bullpen and Terry Francona managing. And
injured players returning to the lineup.
And Eddie Encarnacion going there and all the things that happened. And then they've added Bruce. And so the lineup's better. But they just have never clicked. And Francona was hurt or unhealthy and was away from the team for a while. It just hasn't worked for Cleveland this year. Now, it might change come playoff time. That's the one thing we can say definitively over the last several years. How you finish and what you look like doesn't necessarily translate to what kind of playoff you're going to have.
Yeah, and who you match up against. But, like, Houston's a lock. They're 12 up on anyone else in their division. They're a lock. They're gone.
I don't think there's any races, really, for first place in the American.
I wonder about the Yankees and the Sox, although Boston's really started to pour on. They've really played well. But the Yankees have won four in a row. They just beat the Mets four times in New York. And now they're at Fenway.
Yeah.
And
now they're playing, you know, a real team.
Now they're playing a real team. And I credit the Yankees' Twitter account. I don't know if you saw their tweet earlier today where they posted, like, the four box scores of the four-game sweep and a crown emoji, and it said, bend the knee, kind of taking a page out of the Game of Thrones. Like, don't forget who is the king of the county here in New York. It's the Yankees. And I wonder if the Yankees and the Sox, because they're going to play each other multiple times, if there's a chance that that can become interesting. Cleveland's gone in the Central. Houston's gone. And then I think either Boston or New York have that top wild card spot. The race is the second wild card, and that's where the Jays happen to be. But, like, there's no excuse for anyone three games under 500 this deep into the season to feel like they have a chance of making the playoffs. It shouldn't happen that way.
This has been a debilitating season for Blue Jay fans in so many different ways. So many things have gone wrong, so much lack of performance. I mean, you can make a laundry list of all the things that you hoped would happen and didn't. But I think when the season ends and there is a playoff team with 83 or 84 wins, and it's not the Blue Jays, if you're going to feel bad today you're going to feel a whole lot worse on the 1st of October or whatever the date the season ends is. Because
missed opportunity.
That's not a lot to expect.
Well, I mean, think about those 20 years where they weren't a playoff team.
And they won those 83
How many times were they had even 85 wins, 87 wins, and they didn't get in? You're right. I mean,
and some, most of those years, they weren't close.
No, because the Yankees were so good or the Sox were so good.
And there wasn't two wild cards.
Right. It was just out of the realm of possibility, even with them having mid to high 80 wins.
But even two wild cards, you would expect 88,
but that's my point, Steve. 90. This is an outlier. I don't expect this to carry over. You should not have a team in the playoffs with 83, 84 wins. It shouldn't happen over the course of a full season.
Of that group of teams, do any of them impress you?
In the American League?
Yeah, that like
or that second wild
card. The second wild card race.
Not really. No. I mean,
the one that I thought for a while, because they were really playing well for a long while, was Kansas City. And I thought they were moving into possible, you know, race with Cleveland, and they were moving into wild card. And I thought they had really found their way.
But they really fell
off. And they just fell off the map again.
Well, run differential is something that analytically is an easy number to focus on. The only team with a plus run differential is Texas. Texas is the only team. And I'm looking at them. They've won four in a row. They're 7-3 in the last 10. They're plus 27. They're at 60-60. Now, they sold off. They traded Darvish at the deadline. Yet, they're still kind of in it and hovering analytically. But
was there anything,
everyone else is a deep minus.
Was there anything about the Texas Rangers in either of the last two playoff seasons that convinced you that they were a contender?
No, I never thought going into the playoffs that they were going to win the World
Series. Last year, the Jays just absolutely destroyed them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't even like, what was it, three straight?
Yeah, they won three straight. They did what the Tribe did to the Red Sox. There were two sweeps before the Indians and the Jays met.
Here's what's really interesting to me. If you assume Houston has the best record in the American League,
I think
that's
will.
A natural assumption. So they play the wild card in the playoffs. And now you're going to get Boston and Cleveland in a rematch. And you're going to get Chris Sale and Corey Kluber, the two Cy Young leading
favorites.
Candidates.
Sale's really going to win it.
Well, I think it's still tight.
I don't know.
There's enough time for one of them to either win it or lose it, depending on how many starts are left. I think, what, they have 50 or so games to go?
Less than that. They probably got eight starts.
They have eight starts left. Say you, if Kluber continues to be striking out 10 and 11 and 12 every game, he's going to be right there in the race.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have those two guys in game one pitching against each other, and maybe in game five pitching against each other.
Oh, for sure you would.
That's interesting.
That is. I mean, that's where you can't, like, postseason baseball is totally unpredictable. Like, we were talking about the greatness of the Dodgers during the break. What the Dodgers are doing now, they're getting closer and closer to the moniker of, like, greatest regular season team of all time, or greatest run of all time. Like, they went 43-7 over a 50-game stretch. That had not happened in, like, over 100 years. And you just, every day you look at it, you're like, oh, they've won four games in a row. Like, they've lost 14 games all season at home. Yet, I can't guarantee they're going to win in the playoffs. I can't make that guarantee. Like, in the NBA, I can make that guarantee. In the NFL, I can get close.
What if
Brady's behind center?
If the Cubs hang on and win the Central, because the Cubs have not been great all year. You look at the roster, it's great, but they haven't played great. If they hang on ahead of St. Louis and ahead of Milwaukee, they'll play Washington in the first round, which is one tremendous matchup.
That'd be a great matchup.
And you have the Dodgers playing.
They'll play Colorado or Arizona, who, quite frankly, I don't think they'd want to play against.
Probably wouldn't.
In the division, they know each other.
But then you've got to play either the Cubs or the Nationals. Like, the playoffs this year really are starting. The matchups look phenomenal.
They do look great. And, you know, big markets, the Dodgers, the Cubs, the Nationals, the Yankees are back. Boston's going to be there.
I've only been here for a couple days, and we haven't brought the name up yet. But I think we should bring it up in light of the season he's having and in light of the fact that he is one of ours and it's Toronto guy. What Joey Votto's doing this year with the Cincinnati Reds, a team that's not in contention,
It's
mind-blowing.
They're 20 games under .500. They've been awful for 3 years.
He's having one of the great seasons that baseball players have ever had in any era, in any time. And, you know, I think for whatever reason, I don't know why Toronto doesn't embrace this guy the way maybe we should embrace him.
I think it's a two-way street.
I think it's a two-way street.
I don't think he is seeking that embrace.
Oh, he's not seeking
He doesn't
it.
Want to be on billboards. He doesn't want to put more money in Jimmy the Billboard's pocket. He has no interest in...
We got to talk to Jimmy the Billboard about getting Votto out there.
Yes, because, Steve Nash is...
It took him a while,
but he was Mr. Canada, he was Captain Canada, whatever they called him, but everyone knew where he was from.
He loved to carry the flag.
He loved that he was from Victoria, B.C., and you knew that about him, and he was happy to be known as the Canadian guy playing in the NBA. Joey Votto, he's got an MVP. He should win multiple MVPs the way he's been playing, but it's not... something that the average Canadian or average person in Toronto even knows.
Okay, I'm sticking you in a room by yourself. You are the one man, Lou Marsh, Athlete of the Year committee. You've got Sidney Crosby, Conn Smythe Trophy winner, leading scorer in the playoffs, second leading scorer in the NHL. You've got Joey Votto having the kind of year he's having with the Cincinnati Reds. Who's your winner? And is there anybody else?
I'd have to think of...
Because it's not an Olympic year. There's nobody you look to. Andre DeGrasse didn't run at the World Championships. Mm-hmm. Penny Oleksiak didn't have a great World Swimming Championship. She's the previous winner. Like, there's not this sort of list of normal...
It's going to be those two guys. I mean, McDavid might get some votes.
Well, McDavid won the Hart Trophy, won the scoring title, and there's still a half a season left. Mm-hmm. So if from October to the end of December, he's again the leading scorer in the NHL... Then maybe it's a three-person race. Maybe it's...
I think Sid will probably win it. I think Votto.
What Votto's doing is historically equal to and possibly better than what the other guys are doing, because of the craziness of his on-base percentage, his craziness of how often he's on base.
Well, like, he's got an on-base percentage of .448 right now. Like, that's like Ted Williams. That's absurd.
I'd like to put that in context of the greatest on base percentage seasons of all time.
Oh, like, it would be
where would it be?
Have to be. I don't know off the top of my head, but I would think that would be close to the top, or at least within a conversation. But the Reds were at Wrigley earlier this week. To put it into perspective how hot this guy is and what Votto is doing at the plate and how locked in he is and how almost impossible he is to shut down, they decided when he was at the plate to put forth a four-man outfield with a shift. So the three infielders left were shifted on the right side of the infield. They put a fourth, one of the infielders into the outfielder to make a four-man outfield. He still hit a double. He hit a double with four outfielders.
Down the line. I saw the double. Went down the first baseline.
That's how locked in he is.
What was the number again for on-base percentage?
.448 now.
Ted Williams is the best ever, .481. Babe Ruth is second, .473. John McGraw third, .465. Whatever his number is now.
He's at .448.
Yeah, it's not that far. But when you start talking about Ruth and Gehrig
and
Williams, and those kind of guys, it's a pretty, it's a pretty elite numbers. Lou Gehrig, Bonds, Hornsby, Cobb. This is who's ahead of Joey Votto. Williams, Ruth, McGraw, Billy Hamilton, strangely enough. Lou Gehrig, Barry Bonds, Bill Joyce, Rogers, Hornsby, Ty Cobb, Jimmy Fox, Tris Speaker. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 Hall of Famers. And Barry Bonds, who should be in the Hall of Fame, except for you know why. Mm-hmm. So of the 11 ahead of him, 10 should be in the Hall of Fame. Speaks very well for where Joey Votto finds himself.
And he's got 40 games left, and he's still getting hot. You know, like there's a chance he gets his on base up to like .460. But here's the thing. I'm not
on a team where you can pitch around him all day long.
Yeah, they're awful, and they're not playing for anything. And teams that are playing them, like the Cubs, are trying to win, so why would you pitch to Votto? But... this doesn't factor into the Lou Marsh. That's our Canadian award for the best athlete of the year. I'm not sure he's going to win. I don't think he will win the MVP.
Oh, I don't think so either. I think that the Dodger rookie will win.
You think Bellinger will win? I mean, Stanton might get some votes. I think Paul Goldschmidt, you talk about underrated players, what he represents to the Diamondbacks. No, like, household name. No one knows who Paul Goldschmidt is. Like, no one knows who he is. And they're a team that's more than likely going to beat, I think they'll end up beating Colorado and be the wild card team. But he's going to be in the mix.
I want to go back to Stanton for a second. Because, again, we've had this woe is me season here in Toronto. And it really raises the question of, is this a Blue Jay town or is this a baseball town? And I think the answer is it's a Blue Jays town. Because we don't talk much about Giancarlo Stanton. And he's having a home run season for the ages.
Let's say he gets to 60-plus and becomes the first guy since the steroid era to hit more than 60. Now, he will suffer from being on a non-playoff team and a bad team and a fairly irrelevant team. But let's say he ends up with 63 home runs. Passes Maris. Passes Ruth.
I'm always astounded by Babe Ruth. And what it, you know, reading about him, seeing the movies, the documentaries, whatever it is, I'm just astounded by the career he had. And the fact that he was a 20-game winner as a pitcher.
So, and he was built like me.
Yeah. Anything about Babe Ruth fascinates me. But what really fascinates me is when he hit 60 home runs in 1927, the National League leader had 30. It wasn't like anyone was close to him. I think the American League second batter was
at 43. Well, Lou Gehrig probably had like 40-something.
Yeah, but there was still 17 home runs difference between first and second, and between leagues, 30 home runs difference, which is unheard of in today's world.
And it was less games, 154 games.
And so here you are, and here is Stanton. Ruth hit a home run every 11.5 plate appearances in that season. This year, as of last weekend, because I haven't checked it since, but as of last weekend, Giancarlo Stanton was every 12 plate appearances. So the difference between 11.5 plate appearances, 12 appearances, almost negligible. And yet, here's this guy. He's doing Ruthian things here in a season in which no one saw this coming.
Scott Miller from the Bleacher Report will join us. We'll get his take on Votto and where he stands in the NL this year. Back into the Jays at Wrigley. And Craig Button has been talking about this the past couple of days on TSN. The idea of painting a picture where Tavares signs with the Leafs. We'll talk a little bit about that. And our buddy Mike Kelly, who's a hockey analyst, and he was tweeting about why he just doesn't see this happening and why it doesn't make sense. And he pointed out a couple of past guys who were always connected to the city of Toronto, like Nash and Stamkos. I'll tell you what's changed since Nash was potentially available and even since Stamkos a year ago. We'll get to that next. All right, Scott Miller in about 7-8 minutes from Bleacher Report. So, our buddy Craig Button making the case, or painting a picture in terms of how John Tavares could sign a one-year deal with the Leafs, cash in, be a big part of the team next year before Matthews and Marner and their deals kick in, and then Tavares would have to figure out where he goes from there. I don't see that happening. I don't think it would be in the cards really for either party. But this is a hypothetical. It's August. And Mike Kelly, who does a lot of stuff down here at TSN, and he was tweeting about this earlier, and he brought up that when Columbus was looking to deal Rick Nash, rumors were swirling that he was maybe going to end up in Toronto, and it turned out that Nash had the Leafs on his no-move list that people weren't aware of when they were speculating. Mentioned how Stamkos could have signed in Toronto but didn't, stayed in Tampa. And he follows it up by saying, makes no sense from a Leaf cap perspective, and recent history shows star players from Toronto don't want to play there in their prime. That last part, though, is what has drastically changed. He's not wrong. I mean, that is fact. There have been big-named superstar hometown talent that has been had the opportunity to walk and come up here, and they've decided they don't want to do it. But three big things have changed for me. Three big things have changed, but two in particular when it comes to the team. When Nash was reportedly on the move, the Leafs were a tire fire. They're awful. Last year, Stamkos may have been thinking this team is going to be better, but they were the 30th place team in the league when he was going to sign here. Dead last. You have a legitimate chance at winning a cup here, I believe that, over the next 3 to 5 years with this talent group. So the kids from Toronto will look at the Maple Leafs a lot differently than they did even a year ago, let alone 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago. I think the other point, though, that has changed, the biggest difference that would play the biggest factor in a kid like Tavares wanting to come back here or being comfortable with coming back here, he'd no longer be the man. He'd no longer be deemed the savior. This is Austin Matthews' team. Tavares came here, he'd be the second-line guy. If Stamkos came here this year, it wouldn't be the Steven Stamkos show. It'd be the Matthews show. Like, that's another big thing. If Nash came here when he was reportedly in the news to come here, he would have walked in and it would have been Rick Nash's team, and he's the captain, and you have to lead your hometown team to glory.
And how happy are you that that didn't happen?
Well, absolutely, considering the way his career's played out and all this plan came into place with the Leafs. But they're a legitimate playoff team, and I think moving in the direction of being a cup team, that has changed drastically since Nash and Stamkos, and you're no longer the man when you get here because of the support that's already here, specifically number 34.
You know what hasn't changed at all? Is the culture of the sport. And the culture of the sport is big name, free agents don't change teams. They stay where they are. Every time we've seen a guy who was heading for free agency and he was going to change the market, he was going to set the market, Steven Stamkos stayed in Tampa. The Sedin brothers, at the height of their career, stayed in Vancouver. P.K. Subban had a chance to at least look around. Didn't. You start going through everybody that's had opportunity. Vinny LeCavalier was a big, big star in Tampa. He was going to be the market. He was going to change free agency forever.
Go to Montreal. Yep. Go back to Montreal.
What happened there? Tell me, other than Zdeno Chara, which is the greatest free agent signing in hockey history.
And that was a lockout issue, too.
Yeah,
the lockout factor.
It was also lockout factored and salaries factored because Ottawa had to make a decision. Wade Redden, Zdeno Chara. They made the wrong decision. They picked Wade Redden. But he moved. Name a big name forward in his prime that has moved and become the guy with another team.
Zach Parise, Brad Richards, but those weren't
the guy guys.
Yeah, no, they weren't the guy guys.
Those are the guys I'm talking about. And
well, but then you're talking about 10 players in the league.
Yeah, but if you look at Tavares, he has been the guy for every game, basically, he's played as a New York Islander. And the team has always sort of centered around him, rightly or wrongly, with enough players or not enough players, depending on what season it was. And if you look and say, okay, I'm going to do this for 1 year, that's so far out of the hockey mentality of, I stay where I'm comfortable. I don't tend to move. This is the way the culture is. I'm not going just for one season and then let everybody else get paid and I'll go somewhere else. Maybe Marian Hossa did that. I can't think of very many others who have.
Yeah, Hossa did, I guess, when he was hopping around from Detroit to Pittsburgh and
to try
Chicago
and find a winning team.
Yeah.
But he's pretty unique in that factor. Very few guys have done that. And I don't believe John Tavares is of that mindset or has historically been of that mindset because he's had opportunities to say, you know what, get me out of here.
No, I don't expect
this is, to use your term, this is a tire fire.
Yeah, I don't expect it to change there. But another thing that has changed off the ice with this team, I mentioned the 2 points on it. The fact that they're actually a legitimately quality team and actually getting better is a big difference over the previous 10 years. And because Matthews is here, and even Marner and Nylander, Tavares wouldn't have to step in and be considered this savior that has to find the glory years of his hometown team. But I also think the focus on the free agency, we're doing it now because it's brought up by Craig and it's August, but I don't expect to spend the season focusing on John Tavares and his free agent status. We did that all year with Stamkos because the Leafs were abysmal and they were trying to tank and they wanted to be the worst team in the league. This will not be a 12-month buildup. This will not be happening in November and March and, hey, what's going to happen with Tavares? You think he could fit in here?
So,
I don't see it happening. So there won't be that much built-in pressure because it won't be built up the same way the Stamkos scenario was.
Let me back you up a year. Let's say Steven Stamkos walks out of that meeting that they have where they woo him with sponsors and mayors and politicians and flowers and all the stuff they brought in to bring him to Toronto. And he turns to his agents and says, this is where I want to be. I want to be home. I want to play here. Now, here we are in August of 2017. Is Austin Matthews developed to the point we saw him develop if Steven Stamkos was a Leaf?
Presuming he was healthy the whole time?
Yeah.
Because Stamkos
okay, presuming both guys were healthy and one would center one line and one would center another line.
I don't think you can hamper the greatness of the greats.
Well, I think Matthews
was such a special player.
But opportunity plays a huge part. Who gets the power play time in a certain spot? Is it Stamkos or is it Tavares?
It would change,
or would it be Matthews? I mean,
it would change the dynamics a little bit. I mean, there's no question.
I think that's why circumstantially Steven Stamkos saying no to the Leafs was a tremendous thing for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, it worked out exceptionally well
for both sides. You know,
yeah, because of where you expect these kids to go and how great the season worked out and the focus on homegrown talent. You drafted, you developed your own. I don't know how Stamkos would have played, and he would have affected the salary cap too, because he wasn't taking $8.5 million to play here like he did in Tampa.
I'm going to look at this year's Blue Jays team and just have a little bit of concern about the Leafs. And the concern is, last year, everybody was healthy. Everybody was pretty much healthy. The important people were healthy the whole way through, just about. And we've seen this year what injuries can do to a team with the Blue Jays. You know, what Aaron Sanchez being out and Donaldson being out and, you know, pretty much every starter in one way or another except for Batista being out. It's really hampered their entire season. And so now you look at Marner and Matthews and Nylander and everybody else, and you can't expect 82 games.
No.
Just the way
throw
the world
Anderson
is.
In there, throw Riley in there. Riley had ankle issues,
yeah.
But... we'll get back into that later in the afternoon. Future headlines in about an hour. It's a final down at Wrigley. The Cubs beat the Jays 7-4. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, he is a national MLB columnist for the Bleacher Report. He is Scott Miller. How you doing, Scott?
Real good, guys. How about yourself?
We're doing okay. Trying to keep hope alive here in Toronto, or at least interest alive, because the Jays have had pretty miserable season altogether, yet the American League outside of the top three or four teams have been so bad, it feels like one of those outlier years where a team with 83-84 wins could end up getting in with the second wild card spot. And Steve and I were talking about that earlier this afternoon. Can you recall a season since the second wild card came into play where there have been this many bad teams still in contention in mid-August?
No, I really can't. It's a pillow fight, isn't it? It is not a heavyweight fight going down this wild card run. I think, 16 of the 30 major league teams have losing records, I believe, right now. And, National League as well. But, there's a lot of bad baseball out there right now. And American League-wise, you're right. It's the pack has pretty much come back to everybody else. And outside of Oakland, Detroit, and the Chicago White Sox, I think everybody's still got I won't say a puncher's chance, because that makes it too aggressive. Everybody's got a staggering chance to get into that wild card slot, or one of the two.
So in this mishmash of mediocrity, is there a team you actually like?
Not really. I mean, I look at the two wild card teams right now, the Yankees and the Los Angeles Angels. You know, I mean, the Yankees have had a nice season for themselves, but, you know, Aaron Judge has been really bad since the All-Star break. Other guys as well. I can't believe the Angels are in the second wild card spot right now. I mean, their rotation has been decimated by injuries. Mike Trout's missed so much time, but you look at that Angels team, they don't scare you. The Yankees don't scare you. And those are the two playoff teams as of today. So, you know, beyond that, I kind of like Kansas City for a while. They like themselves well enough to be buyers at the trade deadline. And, you know, they briefly showed, like, hey, they may come back and win that division. And then you know, the last two or three weeks, they've gone straight south. So now, I mean, you look around that, all those teams, and, you know, Minnesota has had a nice season for themselves. And, you know, then they turned into, you know, they had a bad week right before the trade deadline. So they turned and they flipped Jaime Garcia after just acquiring him from Atlanta. He made one start for Minnesota, and they went in the tank, so they traded him to the Yankees. They traded their closer, Brandon Kinsler, to the Washington Nationals. Next thing you know, the Twins unexpectedly reeled off a 5- or 6-game winning streak, and just when it looked like maybe they'd have a chance, you know, last weekend against Detroit, they've got no bullpen without Kinsler, and they blew a game on Saturday to the Tigers. So everywhere you look, there's problems, losing streaks, there's guys not stepping up. It's going to be entertaining down the stretch, but I think that's about as the best thing you can say for it.
With Scott Miller from the Bleacher Report, Josh Donaldson had himself a tough day at Wrigley today, but the past 2 or 3 weeks, he's been exceptional. He's had a down year largely in part due to injuries. He was injured in spring training. He got injured multiple times earlier in the season. He never found his rhythm, but he seems to be finding it now. Is he a guy, even at his age, he's early 30s now, where if he's healthy starting next year, you would have him penciled in again as a top 3 or 4 guy in the American League? Or are you concerned about the injuries and the age when it comes to Donaldson?
Well, I think the older you get, and especially when you're early 30s, you have to be concerned about the injury history. I think there's no question about that. I think with Donaldson, you respect the talent, and you do pencil him in next year, hoping that this year was just an aberration, and, you know, you hope that you can pencil him in to be the guy, the run producer he's been. But that said, I think while you pencil him in as the guy, you have just a little bit more doubt than you once had about him because of the injuries coupled with the early 30s. You know, if he was 25, you say, well, probably the injuries won't affect him as much. But you do have to be concerned, I think.
We were talking about Joey Votto earlier in the hour. His season has been spectacular. What he's done, again, the past month and a half has been outrageous. And he's a Toronto guy, so we're connected to him. Yet he doesn't get enough attention up here, quite frankly. And I'm sure that applies league-wide because of the team he plays for. The Reds have been pretty bad for a while now. But can you put what he's been doing into historical perspective? Because Votto is so locked in, it feels like he's bringing his game to a completely different level, and that's saying something for a former MVP.
No question, and I agree with you. And I don't think he gets enough attention, even down here in the States, let alone in Toronto. And I think the historical perspective, quite simply, is you're looking at a player that's building a very strong Hall of Fame resume. And I think historically speaking, when all is said and done, I think Joey Votto is going to be a Hall of Famer. I think that's the kind of player we're watching right now. I think what he's done, this streak of getting on base twice a game, you know, I think maybe he hadn't gotten enough attention because that's a little bit of an esoteric streak, you know. I mean, when Joe DiMaggio had his hitting streak going, everybody can kind of identify with that. Okay, did he get a hit today or did he not get a hit today? Cal Ripken streak, same thing, the Iron Man streak. Whereas, you know, getting on base twice a game, I don't know if some people know quite what to make of that, but it's phenomenal. I mean, when we're playing Little League Baseball when we're 9 years old, you don't get on base at that level twice a game for however many games in a row Joey Votto has done it now. To do it in the major leagues is incredible. And I think the other thing is, it always tells me a ton about a player like him when he has this kind of a season when the team is not very good, because for two reasons. One, there are holes up and down that lineup. So Joey Votto doesn't have the protection that he had back in the days when Cincinnati was a playoff team. So from that perspective, what Joey Votto is doing without the protection to still command the strike zone and take his walks and smash the home runs and the extra base hits when he gets his pitches. To do that with a weak lineup is astounding. And secondly, to do that on a losing team, especially this late in the season, just speaks to the almost superhuman focus he has, the concentration he has. Because I'll tell you what, this season is so long. You get to this point in the year where you've played 120 games and your team's in dead last place. You know, I mean, I've talked to enough guys. It is really easy to lose concentration, and maybe you give an at-bat away here and an at-bat away there because, you know, you're tired. It's August. It's hard to get up for a game because you know it, there's no meaning to it. You're in last place anyway. For him to continue doing what he's done through all of that, I think is you cannot talk enough about the guy.
We're chatting with Scott Miller from the Bleacher Report.
Scott, I'm old enough to have lived through a time where we thought batting average was important and we thought RBI was important. And over time, we've learned that there are other statistics that are far more meaningful. Is it harder today or easier today to quantify greatness?
You know, that's a good question. And I don't know how old you are. I'm like you. I'm old enough to have lived through that time as well. And one other hint, I'm old enough. I grew up in Michigan. I'm based out west in California now. But I'm old enough to have lived through several classic Dave Steeb versus Jack Morris matchups in Tiger Stadium.
Those were great matchups, weren't they?
Those were some of the great matchups of my youth. I remember just digging them. They were outstanding.
Two of the great mean people of all time.
Yeah. I mean, that was competition there. That was not friendly. That was just off. Get after it, you know. Fangs bared, sweat flopping, and concentration going, and competition going. It was great. You know, I think it might be a little bit harder to quantify greatness statistically because I think with the advent of sabermetrics, and, you know, a lot of the sabermetric people be like, oh, you know, batting average is overrated. RBIs are overrated. So a handful of the old statistics we once measured things by, those of us that grew up and lived during that time were being constantly bombarded with, wait, that you're looking at the wrong numbers. And, you know, some of the numbers, I mean, I'm not a sabermetric guy. It's not that I don't enjoy sabermetrics or think that the sabermetrics, the analyst-leaning people, are smart. They're very smart. I think there's a lot of good in what they do. I'm simply not a sabermetrics guy. Because I hated sitting through math class every day. I love baseball for the people and the game itself. I don't like to break down numbers. But when they start throwing war at you and things like that, I mean, it helps maybe put things into perspective. But I think that's one reason why it's harder to quantify greatness statistically speaking today. I think the other reason is coming out of the steroid era, those numbers in the steroid era became cartoon numbers. They were so distorted. So now you have guys having big home run seasons and hardly anybody pays attention because he's not on some ridiculous pace to hit. You know, he's on pace to hit 75 home runs this year, like just, you know, 15 years ago. So I think power numbers have been diminished as well. I think that's a very good question you ask. I think that's a very legitimate question. I think statistically it can be harder to quantify greatness, but I think, you know, the old eyeball test, you can still look at players and you know, I believe you know greatness when you see it. Maybe the numbers don't always tell you what you think they ought to tell you, or the numbers don't always say what you expect, but I think as you try to parse through the numbers, I still think there are a handful of players that rise above it all, and you watch a guy, be it Clayton Kershaw or Joey Votto, and you say, okay, I don't even have to look at the numbers. I'm watching greatness.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. Really appreciate you taking time for us. Thank you for this, Scott.
My pleasure, guys. You take care. Have a good weekend.
Scott Miller from the Bleacher Report joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red tag days are now on with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca. The truth is, you don't need the sabermetrics or the analytics to tell you who the best players are. Like, I'm looking at the war, top war players in baseball today, position players, wins above replacement. Jose Altuve is number one in baseball at 6.4. Paul Goldschmidt is the number one guy in the National League at 5.8. Votto's at 5.7. Judge is 5.6. Stanton is 5.4. Like, the best guys, you know who those guys are.
And, if you look back historically, it's Ruth, and it's Gehrig,
Williams, and it's yeah. Yeah, exactly. But I think where the numbers come in and help you is that middle ground of players in every league. Where you're like, wow, I didn't realize that guy, who I'd never pay attention to because he doesn't jump off the ice or the field of play or the page when you look at the conventional numbers, you can find something when you dig a little deeper that might suggest he's actually better than what your eyes might tell you or what your impression will tell you.
I think that's the same in any sport. When you watch Crosby play, when you watch McDavid play, when you watch Drew Brees or Brady or Roethlisberger or whoever we're talking about, when you watch those guys play, you don't need numbers to define their greatness. All you got to do is watch them play. You know how great they are. And I think it's same in basketball. When you watch Steph Curry,
yeah,
or you watch Durant, or you watch
you're LeBron. Focusing on them so much because they're going to make you focus on them.
Yeah,
and they're so good.
And they're the guys. Like, if you're sitting in the stands and you can't take your eye off that player, that's the guy you have to watch. That's your Hall of Famer.
That's a great player. Future headlines still to come. We might head down to Wrigley, get you more of a recap on the Jays' loss to the Cubs today. Two more down at Wrigley over the weekend. Steve Simmons in here from Sun Media. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. So, Steve, you're down in Vegas next week. Any chance you're going to be partying with Floyd Mayweather?
I suspect Floyd Mayweather won't be partying next week.
You would be wrong in that proclamation.
Is there one of those parties you buy your way into?
Yep, he's promoting for some club, and he's telling the world, I guess he was on Kimmel last night, I think it was Kimmel, that he's going to be partying all week, and you can hang out with Floyd Mayweather at some club in Vegas.
I do find this hard to... It's one of those things, I think you buy your ticket, and maybe you see a poster of Floyd Mayweather somewhere like that, but you don't actually see him. Or maybe there's video of him talking to you. Maybe he's one of those fake dealers. You ever seen those with the video dealers?
No.
Yeah, there's some casinos that now have video dealers. So there's no real cards. You get... Like, you have, like, a computer screen in front of you.
That would suck. I mean, you want the ambiance of people.
Oh, it completely sucks. It especially sucks when you're losing fast.
Yeah, because it's quicker.
I've done that at a casino in Florida.
I've played online poker a bunch, and it's so aggravating when you're, like, all in with multiple people, and the cards come out so fast, and you don't know what the hell happened, then all of a sudden the screen pops up like you've been eliminated from the tournament. You're like, I didn't even see the cards.
Yeah.
Like, can I file a complaint, because I'm disputing this. I don't even know what just happened.
It's close to 20 years since I've been to Vegas for a fight. That's how dead the boxing scene has been. I'm curious to see how expensive the tables have been from my days.
I'll bet you it's a lot different than the old days.
I'm going to have to pony up.
You better figure it out.
I'm not prepared for this.
Future headlines in the next hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.